May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. Today's lectionary opens with a Cinderella story of sorts. Samuel, the prophet of the Lord, is looking for a new king for the people of Israel, and he finds an unlikely candidate in David, a shepherd boy from the little town of Bethlehem. No songs have been written about him yet, though. This was the last person Samuel would expect. Now, before we get to that, though, a bit of context might be helpful. Samuel is looking for a new king because the current one, King Saul, has fallen out of favor with God. When Saul was anointed king a few chapters earlier in the story, he had everything people look for in a leader. You could say he was a walking, talking advertisement for kingliness. For one, the text tells us, Saul was tall, head and shoulders above everyone else. And if you don't think that's enough of a qualification for leadership, the text also tells us that Saul was handsome. Tall and handsome. A fine and goodly young fellow, in one scholar's translation. Saul looked the part of a king, and the people were happy to follow. Now, despite of what you might at first assume from that description, Saul wasn't arrogant about it at first. In his first few years in the office, Saul ruled with a humble heart. He took the weight of the crown and the responsibilities that came with it seriously. But this humility didn't last long. A few military victories under his belt, and Saul became proud. He stopped listening to the prophet Samuel's advice. He stopped seeking God's counsel and sought to aggrandize himself instead. Saul, you see, Saul became afraid. Afraid of losing his power, afraid of losing the status that he had attained. So Saul sought to secure it by any means necessary, even if that meant ignoring God's commands. So we find ourselves in this passage of the lectionary today. Samuel begins his search for a new king. He'd done it once before as a prophet of the Lord, so how hard could it be to do it once again? All he needs is another fine young fellow, another tall and handsome man to play the role. So at God's behest, he heads up to Bethlehem under the guise of a pastoral visit so as not to arouse Saul's suspicion, and he visits the house of Jesse, just as God has commanded him, and Samuel soon finds himself running a pageant of sorts as Jesse's sons step up for their audition one by one. You know, I can imagine Samuel here, frustrated, a curmudgeonly judge of sorts, and a still small voice whispering in his ear, reminding him not to see with the eyes of man, but with the eyes of the heart. After seven sons take the stand, after all seven sons are found lacking, Jesse finally calls up the runt of the pack, the eighth son, the one he didn't even bother calling over for Samuel's visit, the one he's left out in the fields tending the sheep. Samuel sees this eighth son and notices that he is handsome, sure, but he is just a boy, a ruddy, small, smelly shepherd boy, a boy with a sensitive side, possibly, a boy that knows how to take care of sheep. He is nothing to write home about, really. Certainly not the leader that Samuel had in mind. And yet this boy has something special about him, something that God seems to see, even if others struggle to do likewise. This shepherd boy from Bethlehem is David. This is the boy who would be king. Now, let me be the first to admit, we struggle to see like God sees, to see the heart as opposed to the surface appeal. We are drawn to charismatic, if not outright attractive, personalities, to the type of leaders who fit the mold and look the part. And that is especially true in times of crisis. That is especially true when things seem to be falling apart at the seams. And right now, you might be feeling as though we are living through one such situation, the likes of which few, if any of us, have ever experienced. A veil of fear clouds most conversations I've had over the past couple of weeks. I've parked in empty lots and walked through deserted aisles in grocery stores. I've exchanged nervous looks with people as we pass each other on the street, unnaturally apart. I am more aware than I'd like to be of that distance. I am more aware than I'd like to be of the last time I washed my hands. I am more aware than I'd like to be of how empty this place feels on a Sunday morning without all of you here. We are fighting an invisible enemy, my friends, and we are doing this for the common good. We're doing our best to remain calm. And yet, in this particular moment, we're lacking one of the simplest comforts we rely on in times of crisis, the ability to gather together in one place at one time. So who exactly are we supposed to look to in times of crisis like this one? To whom should we look to for hope when things seem to be falling apart? I know of a woman that lived through something like this once. She was young at the time, in her 20s. She'd gotten married right before her home country plunged into civil war. And this war was maybe somewhat like what we're experiencing now. This war was disturbingly quiet. She didn't hear a whole lot about it in the news. And yet there were national curfews in place. People she knew disappeared off the street. Fighting erupted sporadically around her home and on her way to work, but it ended just as quickly as it had begun. And the day came when she gave birth to her first son. She checked in with a medical student in her neighborhood, a young man who helped her figure out how to hurry the labor along. She and her husband, you see, wanted to get to the hospital during daylight. They didn't want to risk traveling to the hospital in the middle of the night. So she gave birth to her first child, a son, and then a while later, she gave birth to another, a daughter, and then one more after that, another son. And whenever she heard gunfire in her neighborhood, she'd take her three kids and hide in the very back room of her house. She'd put up a mattress against the window, hoping to shut out some of the noise, hoping maybe that the mattress would slow down a stray bullet, should one somehow make its way into that room. And this went on for roughly 12 years. For 12 years, she and her husband worked and took care of their growing family. For 12 years, they loved their kids, took them to school, and took them to church whenever they could. For 12 years, in the face of adversity, in the face of a world that they could not control, even if they had tried, in the face of this dire circumstances, they filled their house with as much love as they could muster. And they found joy in it, enough to get them through that time. My friends, I know this woman well. That woman is my mother. And I am one of those children, the youngest of the three, a recipient of her steady, loving care in the middle of a war. In times of uncertainty, it is tempting, my friends, oh, so tempting to set our hopes on the leaders who fit the mold and look the part. But the truth is, my friends, that in times like these, we don't need one extraordinary leader to see us through. We need a lot of ordinary people in times like these, a lot of ordinary people committed to doing tiny, decent, and extraordinary things. We need you, my friends. We need you to love your family and friends, and we need you to love your neighbors well. You are the leaders we've been waiting for. It is going to take all of us, my friends. And you, yes, even you, are capable of a whole lot more than you can imagine. God took a simple shepherd boy and turned him into a great king. God took a poor Jewish girl in Palestine and made her the mother of the Messiah. God took poor fishermen and lowly widows, crooked tax collectors and Roman centurions, and made of them a kingdom like no other, where the leaders are those who know how to serve, and where the last ones get first dibs on blessing. You don't have to be extraordinary, my friends. The truth of the matter is that you already are. Take courage, love deeply, and keep the faith. Amen.